You've got to be awake for the Third World War, surely.
I don't. This has been keeping me up at night. So, yeah, I do need some help waking up because I've had many restless nights sleep over the last week. I think the situation is very much escalating. We've got some stats to get into about what's going on in terms of death tolls, but I think Toby was going to start off with a bit of an overview of what's been going on in the region.
Yeah, I'll just read from Dropsite News this morning, who published a pretty comprehensive report. I'll pick out some important or some more concise highlights. US and Israeli airstrikes pound Iran for a seventh day. Intense US and Israeli airstrikes hit Tehran and cities across Iran on Friday as the war entered its seventh day. Huge explosions were reported in residential areas of the capital and in the vicinity of Tehran University. Witnesses in Tehran told the AP that airstrikes were particularly intense, shaking homes in the area. Blasts were also reported in Shiraz, Qom, Isfahan and Kermanshah. At least 20 civilians were killed and 30 injured after US-Israeli strikes hit the Zibashar residential district in the city of Shiraz. Two paramedics are among the dead, according to the Tasnim news agencies. This obviously coming off the back of the reports that at least 13 medical facilities have been damaged so far, and amid the fact that evidence grows that the US is responsible for the deadly strike on the elementary school that killed 180 children.
They're liberating these people.
Yeah, they're liberating these people. It was reported by the WSWS, the World Socialist website, that the United States Navy torpedoed the Iranian frigate Iris Dina in the Indian Ocean. In the Indian Ocean on March the 4th, as a war crime, a submarine of the most powerful military force, they say, in the world, snuck up on an isolated vessel, posing no threat to anyone, gave no warning, offered no opportunity for surrender, and sent more than 140 sailors to the bottom of the Indian Ocean. The Trump administration has not offered a single word of justification. It has not claimed self-defense. It has not alleged imminent threat. It has offered nothing because it does not believe that anything is required.
And worth pointing out, this is coming straight from the top from Defense Secretary Hegseth. He's said that it was the first time a submarine...
Secretary of War, Anila.
Yeah, sorry.
Get it right, mate.
It's the first time a submarine has sunk a warship since World War II, so...
Oh, well.
But, I mean, whether or not we want to buy into the kind of hype he's trying to create, it's definitely a sign things are moving. It's a war crime, and it's a sign things are moving in a very scary direction. In terms of overall death toll at this point, it's been a week since these bombings started, since these attacks started, and at least 1,230 Iranians have been killed. That's according to the Foundation of Martyrs and Veterans Affairs, a body affiliated with the Iranian government.
I've noticed that the local commercial news they've been playing it as if it's a little war, a skirmish that the US and the Israelis, and that they're the side we're supposed to be on.
And also I think among the most ridiculous stuff, I mean, we watched just briefly with no volume, Nila and I, just before we were coming on, the post that the White House made declaring... the tagline is "Justice the American way," and it cuts strikes from like Iranian territory with famous movies like Gladiator and Braveheart and
scenes. For me, the most harrowing is scenes from Breaking Bad and Walter White kind of going
with Pete Hegseth saying stuff. And that's what on the White House official Twitter channel.
Like, that wasn't a person just having a fool around.
No, that's the official White House.
It's the official propaganda.
Yeah. And just to, like, that's ridiculous in itself. But so the submarine strike that hit this military, this Navy vessel, confirmed, like, Albanese confirmed the Guardian's reporting that there was three... at least three Australian personnel on board, but that they weren't
In the submarine.
They weren't involved. They didn't participate.
That was doing the shooting.
Yeah.
Doing the war crime.
Yeah, they were in it, but they didn't participate in the attack. They just sort of sat it out. That's what Albanese would like to have you believe.
That will hold up in court.
Yeah.
On another note.
How miserable is that?
Mm.
Shocking. Yeah. Lost for words, I think. Also, obviously, really big news, the death of Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Al-Khamenei. That was on the 28th of February last week. Donald Trump has recently said in an interview following that death that he must have a say on who is chosen as Iran's next leader. Trump has rejected publicly Khamenei's son, Murtadha Khamenei, who's the presumed successor of Al-Khamenei, telling an Axios reporter, quote, "They are wasting their time. Khamenei's son is a lightweight. I have to be involved in the appointment, like with Delcy Rodriguez in Venezuela." So out and proud, kind of imperial aspirations being reported in the press this week.
You were showing us a photo of the head of Red Cross in Australia standing proudly at a function with the Israeli president that recently visited in Australia. They have no shame.
Yeah, so the healthcare workers have condemned the Australian Red Cross Society after its chair attended a welcome reception for Israeli President Isaac Herzog when he was here. Deep Cuts reporting the story. A Australian Red Cross Society chair, Claire Rogers, was photographed at the Sydney reception held for Herzog by New South Wales Governor Margaret Beasley on February 9th. In a media statement provided to Deep Cut, the ARCS said the photograph, quote, was taken at an event hosted by the governor, Her Excellency the Honourable Margaret Beasley, ACKC, to recognise the various organisations, including Australian Red Cross, who supported victims of the Bondi terror attack. So definitely not a political visit, this
yeah,
one.
Yeah,
that,
yeah, and not to talk about when they take photographs like this, they, you know, it's a bit like that old adage that you shouldn't have politics in sport. I mean, they are intrinsically political in their support of these people, and they are refusing to take into account the Red Crescent people that have been killed in Gaza, the Australians who went over as
Zomi Frankum that was targeted.
Yeah, I mean, ridiculous.
But also their obligation to uphold international law.
Exactly.
And these attacks have been shown to be illegal.
Yeah, it's and also just as a sort of a boring little data collection, it would be quite interesting to find out how much money has been spent, public money that has been spent, wining and dining this character.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just to finish a story there, the nurses and midwives for Palestine released a comment to the press saying that as healthcare workers, we take an oath to protect human life and sanctity, and that this compromises the humanitarian mission of the Red Cross. It's reprehensible that Rogers, on behalf of the Red Cross or any healthcare or aid organization, would participate in welcoming or assisting a mass murderer.
A bit closer to home, it was reported by The Age a couple of weeks ago that the Victorian Civil and Administrative Tribunal, the VCAT, has ruled that Palestinian activist Hash Taye incited hatred against Jews when he led a chant of "All Zionists are terrorists" at a Melbourne protest in March last year. The ruling, which coincides with the recent formal opening of the Royal Commission into Anti-Semitism and Social Cohesion, is the first ruling to make an explicit link between anti-Zionism rhetoric and hatred of Jews. It's fascinating that it should actually be in VCAT, especially if you go back and listen to the Greg Barnes analysis of the speech suppression laws that we played last week, because in court he maintained there would be quite a lot of argument around this finding these slogans anti-Semitic, but they go to one of the lowest courts. This is VCAT is the place where you go when you have a problem with your neighbours.
Yeah, or my landlord. Are
your landlord?
My landlord doesn't fix my leaky sink.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
But it's a very concerning ruling because I think
it's setting up a precedent.
Definitely. And worth pointing out, Zionism is a political ideology.
Yeah.
It's publicly having it on the record that you are going to be punished for critiquing a political ideology that you don't agree with. One of your basic rights in a modern liberal democracy.
Yeah. Very interesting. There were other couple of things that came up specifically in the Victorian context. You might have been really outraged as they want to topple the towers for public housing and not replace them with public housing, but with affordable housing, with all these public-private partnerships, which are supposed to be such a great solution to our social needs. A developer that branded itself the ethical alternative to a profit-driven industry is moving to slash affordable housing quotas at two major Melbourne projects 2 years after the state government granted its controversial height concessions. This is reported by Rachel Dexter in The Age. The developer, Assembly Communities, has applied to the state government to water down the affordable components it promised at new builds in Brunswick and Coburg just months before construction finishes. Assembly's new development on Victoria Street in Brunswick, Justin McManus, under its proposal, the developer would ditch its signature build-to-rent-to-own model at the projects in Victoria Street, Brunswick and Sydney Road, Coburg. Both were originally fast-tracked under the state government's development facilitation program on the proviso that 60% of the units would be affordable. The project bypassed local council oversight because of the 60% affordable purchase mandate. This fast-tracking in 2024 allowed the Coburg Towers to soar to 16 stories, well above the 10-story guidelines for the area. Boom, boom. Though, and now, of course, they go, oh, it's a fait accompli. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it?
I mean, if you were cynical.
Well, I am.
It's never suspicious.
never apologise for being too cynical. What it's really saying is that all of this claptrap about private, public-private arrangements, that housing needs to be affordable, and, of course, that's contentious in itself. The notion of affordability, very slippery kind of terminology. The idea of social housing versus public housing, where people think that social housing is public housing, which it isn't. It's in the hands of specific, maybe it's a new version of slum landlordism. Who knows? Who knows?
And
don't
the whole
quote
point
me on it.
Or also just withholding, sorry, Anila, just withholding tenancy to people that do because they don't fit some mysterious criteria.
Exactly.
Well, this is a great segue into what I was going to say, actually, because it just completely undermines the entire purpose of having public housing available to people. The point is that it's available to anyone that needs it.
That's right. And it makes it laughable that the government can trot out notions that are and false answers, ersatz answers, to what is a fixable problem, pretending that it's the unhoused people that are the issue when they're not.
Basic responsibility of government. It's why we pay our taxes, so that they can provide services to people that need them.
Yeah, and not it, their fundamental function is not there to make private business profitable. Believe it or not, that's not that is not the purpose of government.
Yeah, and also, I mean, on a personal note, I went and bought something that I needed that I bought off Marketplace at the public housing towers. That was where the bloke was meeting me. And you could go there. I went there, 11:30 at night? just families hanging out.
Yeah.
It's just a completely normal place. If you go and sit down in the park, just go. I mean, probably most listeners would already know, but encourage your friends to just go there and understand what it is that is being
destroyed. Exactly. And just before we move on, unless you guys have got something else to say, I noticed that this really interesting thing, but it was reported by Koala by Tracy Harris, the subclass 485 visa is a post-study work visa that allows eligible international students to remain in Australia temporarily after completing their studies. The government has decided that it's going to double the fee for those people. So it started off at $2,000 the 1st of July last year, and it's now being increased to over $4,000. Which is kind of $4,600. It's been the cost of a temporary graduate visa application has doubled.
Which does make sense if you think about kind of the messaging, even from the beginning of the first Albanese government's term around migration. They're clearly trying to reduce migration, but also recognise how profitable of an industry higher education is. And a lot of that profit is coming from international students. So what better way of maintaining the profit you're making and also reducing migration than making it ridiculously expensive?
Isn't that horrific? If you were in the position that you were planning and hoping and doing all this stuff, because, I mean, it's not actually inexpensive to become a graduate, is it?
No.
You're on solid.
And they're subsidising local undergraduates is also important to point out.
Yeah. Well, it's... yeah. You're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie, Tobiah and Anila.